Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. We have a very special show this morning. In fact, it's our Thanksgiving weekend special edition of Two Jewish, with an extra helping of songs, stories, and gratitude. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevna on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. We're trying something different this week in keeping with the spirit of Thanksgiving. This is the very first edition of the Two Jewish Radio Show with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, that we have ever aired that does not have a special guest. After 645 shows over 12 and a half years, we decided to try a holiday-themed format for this holiday weekend. After all, we have a great deal to be grateful for here on Two Jewish. It seems appropriate to share that, you know, with you. So a few thoughts about Thanksgiving to begin the morning. My friends, in our society, we are supposed to say thank you all the time, and any kind of thanking eventually becomes routine. Get a gift, write a thank you note, the waitress brings your meal or fills your water glass or gets a napkin, you say thank you. A guy moves his chair for you or says Gesundheit when you sneeze or tells you where the bathroom is and you say thank you. It's frequent, ordinary, and banal. Gratitude is good form. It means about as much as answering fine when somebody asks, how are you? For most of us, saying thanks is just a reflex, an automatic, autonomic social response, a smile that never reaches our eyes. It's amazingly easy to turn a basic human emotion like gratitude into a meaningless ritual. But there's something troubling about that, for giving thanks is far from an ordinary or natural process. In fact, one of the most important things that separates human beings from other animal species is our ability to say thanks, even for basic necessities in life. Animals may feel grateful for their next meal, but they are much too busy devouring it to pause and pay homage to whatever brought it to their mouths. But humans have both the capacity to eat and to express thanks for that fact. And boy, this weekend did we eat. Look, our purpose in saying grace before meals in Jewish, Christian, and Muslim faiths is based on a passage in Deuteronomy, V'achalta v'savato v'erachta, in chapter 5, you shall eat and be satisfied and bless your God. In other words, for the good basic sustenance you're getting, offer thanks to the one who created it and who created you. The rabbis of the Talmud believe that this biblical sentence taught a great deal more than this. They believe that the most basic biological act, eating food, something we do three times a day, some of us more than that, this ordinary act needed to be raised to the level of sanctification and holiness. According to Jewish tradition, the tables on which we eat are to be spiritually transformed into altars for worshiping God by saying blessings of thanks before and after every meal. We are to make every meal a time of deep gratitude to the one who supplies our needs. But that's hard to do. It's a noble idea, sanctifying even the most routine parts of our lives, but that requires a level of consciousness most of us just can't maintain. Gratitude is a strange, changeable thing. Many times we try to thank someone in a way that'll matter, only to find that our Thanksgiving offering misses its target. Other times, we feel profoundly grateful, but allow ourselves to be too busy so that we just don't get around to showing it. For some of us, it's difficult even to say thank you for what people do for us. It means accepting that we are worthy of someone else's kindness and generosity, that we deserve to be taken care of or loved. Casual thank you is easy, but kind of meaningless. Effective thanksgiving and thanks receiving requires thought and care. But leave aside for a moment the question of how we manage to thank those most difficult of God's creations, other human beings. Let's talk a bit about what it means to give thanks directly to God. How about you? Do you ever thank God? If so, when do you mostly feel like offering thanks, praise, gratitude to God? I feel it most profoundly when I experience the spectacular beauty of nature, a great sunset over the mountains, an early morning walk on the sand of a misty beach. It's a time when my heart opens up, when I'm exalted by a deep and profound sense of connection to the source of all life and beauty. That's a little heavy for a morning radio show, perhaps, but a wonderful thing to think about on this post-Thanksgiving weekend. But most of the time, I don't feel that way. Well, we don't feel that way. Not when we're stuck in holiday traffic, or we have to pay taxes, or pay our bills from Black Friday shopping, or when our computers crash, or our spouse, or children, or parents, or bosses, or employees make yet another impossible demand on our time and patience. You know, ordinary life gets in the way. Perhaps we have it wrong about Thanksgiving. It's not that Thanksgiving is so special. I mean, there is something ordinary about the process of giving thanks, but it's not that the process is ordinary. It's the things we should feel grateful for that appear on the surface to be ordinary. Thanksgiving shouldn't just be about special events and gorgeous places. It's a way to link us through simple, practical gratitude to a divine network of life-giving and life-creating thanks. In the Torah, when Jacob says, after he wakes from his dream of the ladder to heaven, "Hey, God was in this place, and I didn't know it." Wow, that's the point. God's gifts are right here. We need to learn to see them and be grateful for them, for the ordinary things, for life, for health, for our families, however constructed, for our friends, for our ability to listen to the Two Jewish Radio Show on this post-Thanksgiving Sunday morning. Well, on this Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend, we thank God then, not for great gifts or waterfalls or financial windfalls or promotions or basketball or football wins or even new births. We express gratitude for the simple blessings that keep us alive and sustain us, that allow us to experience this miraculous world in all of its precious sacred beauty. In particular, we give thanks for friends, for family, for our health. All these ordinary miracles do is keep us going. And my friends, that is miracle enough. To play us in on this Thanksgiving special, here's a song of gratitude from the Psalms. It's by Yitzchak Katz. We will offer thanks to you for the sake of your honor. Hodu l'man yizamercha kavod.
Hodu l'zecher kodsho v'hodu l'zecher kodsho. Hodu l'zecher kodsho v'hodu l'zecher kodsho.
Vatir paeh.
That was Yitzchak Katz of the Karlbach-style Revela Sheva group singing Hodu, Thanks, on this Thanksgiving special of Too Jewish. When we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish, we'll catch up on Hanukkah and hear from our mavens on Israel and the Jewish world. We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
You know, it's slightly hard to believe that Hanukkah is coming up so soon, but with Thanksgiving over, it's the next holiday of consequence on our ritual radar. We'll continue to feature some Hanukkah music each week as we build up to the Festival of Lights. Our own celebration, the greatest Hanukkah on earth at Temple Emmanuel, the biggest one in all of Arizona, is just 2 weeks away on Sunday, December 14th. It's appropriate to begin to get in the mood. Here's a lovely early Hanukkah melody from Sephardic artist Flori Jagoda of Yugoslavia, back when there was a Yugoslavia. In Ladino, the language of the Jews of Spain, a mixture of Hebrew and Spanish, it's called Ocho Candelicas, 8 nights of Hanukkah, with matchmaking parties every night among the Sephardim, singing, dancing, little almond cakes. By the group, The Voice of the Turtle.
Hanukkah linda está aquí, ocho candelas para mí. Hanukkah linda está aquí, ocho candelas para mí.
Una candelica, dos candelicas, tres candelicas, cuatro candelicas, cinco candelicas, seis candelicas, siete candelicas, ocho candelas para mí.
Muchas fiestas voy a hacer con alegría y placer. Muchas fiestas voy a hacer con alegría y placer. Oh,
una candelica, dos candelicas, tres candelicas, cuatro candelicas, cinco candelicas, seis candelicas, siete candelicas, ocho candelas para mí.
Los pastelicos voy a comer con almendricas y la miel. Los pastelicos voy a comer con almendricas y la miel.
Candelica, dos candelicas, tres candelicas, cuatro candelicas, cinco candelicas, seis candelicas, siete candelicas, ocho candelas para mí.
That was Ocho Candelicas, 8 Nights of Hanukkah, from The Voice of the Turtle, for the coming Festival of Lights and Religious Freedom in about 2.5 weeks. When we come back, we'll hear from our mavens, Oshrat Barel and Tom Price, on Israel and international Jewry.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is the cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine, flavorings from FlavorArt in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch, or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, twojewishradio.com, or download us at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts.
Oh, my God.
Pardon?
Oh, no, Mrs. Robinson. Oh, no.
What's wrong?
Mrs. Robinson, you didn't expect...
What?
I mean, you didn't really think I'd do something like that.
Like what?
What do you think?
Well, I don't know.
For God's sake, Mrs. Robinson. Here we are. You got me into your house. You give me a drink. You put on music. Now you start opening up your personal life to me and tell me your husband won't be home for hours.
So?
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me. Aren't you?
There was a death of one of the greats of the entertainment world last week, the famed actor and comedian, but above all, stage and film director Mike Nichols. Nichols is best known for directing The Graduate, which won the Academy Award for Best Picture way back in 1968, but that's really just the tip of Nichols' iceberg of outstanding achievement. He's one of 12 human beings in history to have won Oscars, Emmys, Tonys, and Grammys, the legendary EGOT. By way, five of the 12 recipients of this imaginary EGOT thing have been Jewish, of course. Anyway, Mike Nichols has won the most awards of any of the other multi-platform talents with 15 of the Stellar Entertainment Awards. By all accounts, Mike Nichols was a brilliant director of actors who always got the very best performance out of each of them. Films like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Carnal Knowledge, Catch-22, Silkwood, Primary Colors, The Birdcage, and Working Girl, among others. Films he directed were nominated for 42 Academy Awards in all. On Broadway, he directed and produced extraordinary and diverse plays, ranging from classics to comedies to musicals. From Barefoot in the Park and The Odd Couple and other Neil Simon comedies, Annie, which he produced, The Gin Game, Uncle Vanya, which he translated himself, Spamalot, and The Death of a Salesman. On TV, Mike Nichols helped create the series Family and directed the widely acclaimed adaptations of Angels in America and Wit. He was an American Jewish original. Mike Nichols began life as Mikhail Igor Peskovsky on November 6, 1931, in Berlin, born to a German Jewish mother and Russian Jewish father. Nichols was distantly related to Albert Einstein on his mother's side. He was a genius, too, of a different sort. In April 1939, the 7-year-old boy and his younger brother were sent to escape the Nazis and join their father in New York. Nichols later remembered not having a single friend in America until he reached college at Chicago. In college, he met Elaine May when she attended a play he was performing in, a relationship that changed his life. After dropping out of the University of Chicago's pre-med program, his father was a physician, Nichols actually began his career in radio. creating a variety show based on folk music at a classical music station in Chicago. That show is still running under the same name, The Midnight Special, some 60 years later. Mike Nichols moved to New York in 1953 to study acting with legendary coach Lee Strasberg, but soon moved back to Chicago to join Elaine May, Shelley Berman, and Paul Sills in the comedy troupe The Compass Players, the predecessor to Chicago's now famous Second City. A few years later, Nichols and May started performing comedy on their own. By 1960, they had a Broadway show, and a year later, the best-selling comedy album of the year. Mike Nichols' first major award was a Grammy for Best Comedy Performance in 1961 for An Evening with Mike Nichols and Elaine May. Nichols and May were brilliant and successful, so naturally they broke up professionally. And shortly thereafter, Nichols went on to become the hottest director on Broadway, winning Tonys by the bunch, eventually 9 of them. But most of all, Nichols was legendary for showing us human relationships in ways that movies and even plays had never dared to do, honestly, intimately, and painfully.
Jonathan, I'll always be your friend.
Jesus, Susan, I hope not.
Nichols' films and plays could also celebrate the triumph of the underdog, like he himself. His biggest commercial film success was the Melanie Griffith, Harrison Ford, Sigourney Weaver 1988 hit Working Girl, and he created artistic films that were also gripping and rich. He was faithful to the script, as all theater people tend to be, and he had a way of making actors shine with the words they'd been given. It was Mike Nichols who picked an unknown actor with no film experience, Dustin Hoffman, to star in The Graduate, beginning an incredible acting career. It was also Mike Nichols who selected Simon and Garfunkel to do the score for that film. And when Paul Simon couldn't come up with new music quickly enough, Nichols chose the existing Simon and Garfunkel songs that made it such a groundbreaking generational film. He was also the one who suggested changing a new Simon and Garfunkel song from Mrs. Roosevelt to Mrs. Robinson.
God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray.
By the way, Mike Nichols is also credited with having discovered Whoopi Goldberg when she was a street performer. He later directed her on Broadway, but most of all, he was a phenomenal director, one of the greatest ever.
If you're a writer, you really want Mike to direct your screenplay because you know that every shot and every costume and every piece of furniture and every shoe and everything you see is going to tell your story and never give it away. I have to go back to my Jewish theme now because I don't want to not be thematic.
As Elaine May said, continuing her Jewish theme, Lech l'shalom, go in peace, Mike. From fleeing Nazi Germany as a young boy to a 60-year career creating some of the best of American theater, film and television, serious, comic and musical, little Igor did very well. We continue our pre-Hanukkah preview of music now for the coming Festival of Lights with my friend Rabbi Joe Black's delightful song, Judah Maccabee.
A long time ago, in a land called Modin, lived a young man named Judah, brave and serene. When Antiochus the tyrant said the Jews could not be free, he didn't count on Judah, the one called Maccabee. In the window, shining so bright, I can see those Hanukkah lights, and it gives me such a warm, friendly glow when I think of Judah Maccabee so long ago. Judah and his brothers, they said it wasn't right to take away their freedom. They knew they had to fight. They fought 3 long years till the king could take no more. They rebuilt the holy temple, its beauty they restored. In the window, shining so bright, I can see the Hanukkah light, and it gives me such a warm, friendly glow. When I think of Judah Maccabee so long ago.
That was Rabbi Joe Black singing Judah Maccabee for Hanukkah, beginning the evening of December 16th this year for 8 crazy nights.
We welcome our Mivi Na, Oshrat Bar-El, head of the Weintraub Israel Center here in Tucson. Boker Tov, Oshrat. Good morning.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
These are difficult times. You know, people are speculating, is this a new intifada? It seems extremely clear that this is a new intifada started by Palestinians and Palestinian terrorists. It's not being reported that way exactly. Let's talk about what's going on.
Yes, Rabbi, I think it's the third intifada, and what's scary with this intifada, that this one seems not to be organized. And I mean, like, everyone who think, who just woke up in the morning and want to kill Jews, just take a knife, axe, guns, whatever, like...
drive their car.
And just, yeah, and what's make it very difficult to... the Israel intelligence, you know, to track these terrorists before they are acting. So that's what scares me about this intifada, among
all the other. So the speculation is this isn't really organized by Hamas or the Palestinian Authority or Islamic Jihad or any of the known groups. This is just a
maybe
spontaneous.
All of them. Maybe all of them includes all kind of spontaneous
efforts by Palestinians.
Exactly.
So this is, in many ways, this is what Israel has always been the most afraid of, is that Israeli Arabs, as they're referred to in Israel, they call themselves Palestinians, but who have really not responded in most of the previous intifadas. They have not attacked Israelis there, but it was a little bit at the beginning of the second intifada, and then it calmed down. People who've been living in Israel their whole lives, and for many generations,
and enjoy all the benefit of being Israeli.
You know, they consider themselves second-class citizens, but they have modern health care, they don't serve in the army, they by and large have a higher standard of living and a much safer life than if they were living in Palestinian areas outside of Israel. And the fear is that they're now part of this.
Yes, and one of the reasons that like I'm hearing that since the... do you remember the 16-year-old Arab Israeli who killed in Shuafat?
Terrible killing after
and
the three
so
Israeli.
Since then, there is a lot of tension between Arab in Jerusalem and Israelis. So that's why they identify the murder as one of the for their escalation among the Arab Israelis.
Particularly in Jerusalem?
Particularly in Jerusalem, yeah.
We hope it isn't what we think it is, but we will talk about it much more next week. Thanks, Oshrat.
Thank you, Rabbi.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
ISIS, or ISIL, has been all over the news, taken large swaths of Iraqi territory, still engaged in Syria, attacking the Kurds. What is it? Where did it come from? And how are people figuring out how to deal with it? Or is there a way to deal with it?
Well, I think part of the problem in answering the last question, like how do we deal with it, is we're not really sure what it is. We have very little information, hard intelligence. They're hard to infiltrate. It's a non-state movement that characterizes itself as a state, as the Islamic State, and which clearly has as its agenda eventually taking over the whole Islamic world and remaking it in the image of a mythic Islamic empire that existed for a short period under the Arabs, particularly under the Umayyad dynasty, which was around from like 660 to 750 of the Common Era.
Just barely the medieval period. I mean, almost the ancient world. It's wild.
Right. Kind of what in Western Europe was called the Dark Ages. The only place that places that empire, that Islamic State led to a real flourishing of civilizations, were the two extremes of the empire, one in Iraq and one in Spain. And everywhere in between broke away very quickly, was mired in poverty, eventually succumbed to various waves of Turkic invaders from northeastern Asia, and ultimately most of that Islamic empire became part of the Ottoman Empire, which was much more multi-ethnic and much less Islamic than ISIS or ISIL would like to, whatever they are.
Much less Arab as well, if you think about
it. Oh, they weren't Arab at all. I mean, the local populations were Arabs, but they were ruled by Turks.
Right.
Or, in fact, by Ottomans, because many of the Ottoman rulers were, in fact, Greeks or Armenians or Serbs or Bulgarians,
Kurds,
who
you name it,
were trained in the palace and became Ottomans without ever becoming Turks. So part of the problem is we don't know much about ISIS. We don't know really who they are. Their motivations are fairly clear, but once they achieve even greater military success, it's hard to say where they want to go. So it makes formulating a strategy to combat them extremely difficult. We need more what's called in the business human intelligence about who these people are, what they want, and what might be the most effective ways to combat them. As I said last week, our country doesn't have a great record, and most Western countries don't have a great record, of fighting non-state entities. And this is very much a non-state entity. It's an extremist populist movement that reflects really one end of the Arab political, cultural mindset, but really an extreme fringe, not the mainstream by any means.
Fascinating. You know, it's frightening to think about here that American arms, which have poured into the area, are now being taken by ISIS and used by ISIS. It sounds just a whole lot like Vietnam in some unpleasant ways. Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. For months, Mrs. Pitzel has been nagging her husband, Milt, to go with her to the seance parlor of Madame Frida. Milty, she's a real gypsy. She brings the voices of the dead from the other world. We all talk to them. Last week, I talked with my mother, may she rest in peace. Milty, for $20, you can talk to your Zadie, whom you miss so much. Milton Pitzel could not resist her appeals any longer. At the very next seance at Madame Frida's seance parlor, Milty sat under the colored light at the green table, holding hands with the person on each side of him. All were humming, oom, oom, doom.
Madame Frida, her eyes lost in a trance, was making passes with her hands over a crystal ball. "My medium Vashtri," she called, "come in. Who is that with you? Who? Who?" It's Mr. Pitzel. Milton Pitzel's Zadie." Milty swallowed the lump in his throat and called, "Grandpa? Zadie?" "Ah, Miltele," a thin voice quavered. "Yes, yes," cried Milty. "This is your Milty, Zadie. Are you happy in the other world?" "Ay, Miltele, I'm in bliss. With your bubby together, we laugh, we sing, we gaze upon the shining face of the Lord." A dozen more questions Milty asked his Zadie, and each question his Zadie answered until the voice of his Zadie coming from the medium said, "So now, Miltele, I have to go. The angels are calling. Just one more question I can answer. Ask, ask." "Zadie," sighed Milty, "when did you learn to speak English?" That was the old accent on the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature to Jewish Just For You. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. We're currently in the midst of a sequence of splendid portions, rich in complexity, action, and misdeed, all blended together with some serious family dysfunction. This week's Sedra Vayishlach in Genesis continues the tale of Jacob, the most intriguing of the patriarchs, a man who rises above his own duplicitous nature to become the father of almost all the tribes of Israel. As our story begins, Jacob is returning home to Canaan, having made good in the old country of Sumeria, today's Iraq. He has 4 wives, 12 children, including 11 sons, and flocks of sheep, herds of cattle, great wealth for that day. As he's about to cross into Canaan, he learns that his brother Esau, whom he wronged so seriously just before leaving home in a rush 20 years earlier, is coming to meet him with an army of 400 men. Jacob is panicked by the news, deducing that Esau is not heading his way with 400 men with spears just to welcome him home. To try to preserve at least half his household, Jacob divides the family and possessions into 2 camps, carefully arranges a large gift for Esau, and that night goes out alone onto a small island in the midst of the tributary of the Jordan River to contemplate his options. While there, a stranger comes to him. The Torah is unclear as to whether this nocturnal visitor is a man, an angel, a representative of God in some other way, even a character in Jacob's dream. Jacob wrestles with the visitor the rest of the night. Finally, as dawn is breaking, he prevails. The stranger cannot break away, and before he can escape, Jacob insists the stranger give him a blessing. It is at this moment that Jacob is blessed with a new name, Yisrael. Israel. First time that famous name is used in the Bible. It means either Prince of God, or more likely, one who wrestles with God. And we, children of Israel, that is, children of Jacob, have been wrestling with God in one way or another ever since. As the angel tells Jacob, "Your name shall be called Israel, for you have contended with gods and men and have prevailed." Jacob, now known also as Israel, survives, and the reunion with Esau proves anticlimactic. Esau comes up to Jacob with all his armed men, but instead of attacking him, he gives his brother a big hug and kiss. And if all is not forgiven, at least no blood is shed. The dramatic narrative of Jacob's struggle and triumph have become a metaphor for our own struggles with belief and with family. We are all descendants of Yisrael, the one who wrestled with God. And if we engage seriously in that process, for the sake of sacredness and belief, we too may triumph and reach our own promised land. Even during a season of merciless commercialism like the one we're in now, holiness can still be created and found. In fact, it is that very search and struggle that make us, the people of Israel, give us a land engaged in that same pursuit. When we truly are children of the one who wrestled with God, when we choose to wrestle with God, we elevate our lives and our experiences. May it be so in this holiday season and in all seasons.
Our Jewish poetry slam on the theme of wrestling in a darker vein comes from the great Israeli poet Yitzhak Lamdan, and it's called Israel. And so, night after night, God, you come to me, not to favor me do you come, but my strength to try. And as I prevail against you until morning, again I am alone, a poor strange wayfarer limping on my thigh. You have contended with gods and men and have prevailed. Is this all the blessing you apportioned me, mysterious one? Woe is me, I know, against all of you I have prevailed over everything, but over me I could not, over myself alone. Your blessings weigh heavily upon me. I cannot carry them. Limping and alone over all the highways I go, vanquish me once, O you, and let me rest at morn, the rest that all the vanquished know. Again it is night. I am alone. Again God descends. Israel! Here I am, God. Here I am. Why do you come down each night to wrestle with me? And as dawn rises, you forsake me, limping again. That was Yitzhak Lamdan's great poem, Israel, for this week's Torah portion of Vayishlach from the book of Genesis. When we return in a few moments here on Two Jewish, we'll get the news of Jews around the world.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Still reeling from the horrific Palestinian Arab terror attack on the synagogue in Har Nof in western Jerusalem last week, Israel was jolted by another attack, this time by Palestinian Arab terrorists near Jaffa Gate in Jerusalem. A mob of Arabs surrounded two Israeli Jewish guys. Three Palestinians from East Jerusalem stabbed the two men, one of whom is in serious condition. Israeli police arrested the men for this new terror attack in what is being termed the Jerusalem Intifada. In other news on that front, after a month in the hospital, Rabbi Yehuda Glick was released last week. Glick was fortunate to survive an October 29th terror attack aimed at assassinating him. Rabbi Glick was shot four times by a Palestinian Arab terrorist on a motorbike who said, "I am shooting you because you are desecrating Al-Aqsa, the mosque on the Temple Mount that is sacred to Muslims." Ladies and gentlemen, a person who shoots a person in the name of Al-Aqsa is the one who desecrates Al-Aqsa, Rabbi Glick said in widely broadcast comments. Referring to the hospital where he spent nearly 4 weeks recovering from four gunshots to the chest, neck, stomach, and arm, Rabbi Glick added, "A Muslim who treats patients at Shaare Tzedek Hospital is the one who defends the honor of Islam." Boy, how can anyone sane disagree with those comments? They are, at best, noble. At worst, absolutely true. Rabbi Yehuda Glick is the leader of a fringe group that wishes to establish Jewish prayer on the Temple Mount. They have not succeeded, and that in no way justifies his attempted murder in this brutal fashion by Palestinian Arab terrorists. In the meantime, Israel and Jordan should have been celebrating the afterglow of the 20th anniversary of their peace treaty last week, and 2 decades of close cooperation in the Middle East. Unfortunately, shortly after the anniversary, Jordan recalled its ambassador from Israel back on November 5th in the wake of the closing of the Temple Mount, the Haram al-Sharif, the sacred precinct, nominally still under Jordanian sovereignty. Further roiling the waters, last week the Israeli embassy in Amman sent a letter protesting the condolences that Jordan's prime minister issued the families of two Palestinians who had stormed the synagogue with meat cleavers and a gun, killing four rabbis and scholars in the middle of morning prayers, killing an Israeli Druze police officer, and wounding a number of other innocents. The perpetrators, terrorist cousins from East Jerusalem, were killed in a gun battle with security forces after their atrocity. A spokesman for Jordan's government condemned the attack and all acts of violence that hurt civilians, whatever their origin. But the prime minister sent a cable to the families of these murderers, saying, "I ask God to envelop them with mercy and to grant you patience, comfort, and recovery from your grief." Israeli leaders are still fuming over a condolence letter President Mahmoud Abbas of the Palestinian Authority sent to relatives of Mu'attaz Hijazi, the suspect in the Glick shooting who was killed by Israeli forces in the gun battle, that described him as a martyr who defended the rights of our Palestinian people. The Israeli Foreign Ministry refused to release the protest letter sent to Jordan, but said in a statement that its embassy also had presented a series of anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli cartoons that have recently been published in the Jordanian media, and noted the dimension of incitement and escalation following such publications.
To life, l'chaim. To life. Life has a way of amusing us, blessing and bruising us. Drink l'chaim to life.
There is at least some happy news today. Influential American lifestyle magazine, The Wine Spectator, has selected Recanati Winery's Cabernet Sauvignon, a wine from the Upper Galilee series in Israel, as one of the top 100 wines of 2014. Every year, the Wine Spectator editors taste 18,000 wines from vineyards around the globe in order to choose the best 100. This is the first time that an Israeli wine made it onto that prestigious list. The magazine's managing editor, Kim Marcus, described the Recanati Cabernet Sauvignon Galilee, which ranked 93rd on the list, as a rich red, showing good power to the mineral-infused dried blackberry, dark plum, and currant flavors. Engaging dried herbal notes emerged on the focused finish. The Recanati Winery was founded in 2000 in the industrial zone of Israel's Hefer Valley in the Sharon region. Following its inclusion on the prestigious list, orders have been pouring in from all around the world. "This is an exciting achievement," said Lanny Recanati, one of the winery's owners, stressing that the Recanati Cabernet Sauvignon Galilee costs just 60 shekels, about $16 a bottle, while the top 100 list includes many wines, which average as high as $150 a bottle. "We market all around the world, including to the British royal family," said Recanati Winery CEO Noam Jacoby. "I have no doubt we will continue producing excellent wines in the years to come." Mazel tov to Recanati, l'chaim, and to the entire wine industry of Israel. It has come a long way from the Carmel days, and it is making a tasty splash in the challenging and prestige-drenched world of international wines. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world. I'd like to share some additional news stories for you today. Please listen closely. These are especially important. A Turkish court charged 9 suspected accomplices in Istanbul's suicide bombings at 2 synagogues, the British consulate, and a London-based bank in Istanbul. 57 innocent people died in those attacks. At the arraignment, a police line held back a crowd of shouting relatives, including several women wearing black chadors, the all-covering Islamic garment rarely seen in downtown Istanbul. Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan, in a televised national address on the eve of the Eid al-Fitr, the religious holiday ending the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan, appealed to Turks to resist terrorism. "This is a war between justice and cruelty, good and bad, true and false. It is our right to expect every sensible person to stand by justice, good and truth in this war," Erdogan said. He also said it was too early to confirm al-Qaeda was involved. In other news, the Palestinian prime minister urged the Israeli prime minister to take serious and significant steps to renew the dialogue between Israel and the Palestinians. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Authority leader said that Israeli hints of unilateral moves showed that Israel was not serious about peace. The Prime Minister of Israel repeated his earlier statements that he has become convinced there is no reason to wait for the Palestinian government. He is not rejecting unilateral steps, not as concessions, but for the good of the state of Israel. The Israeli Secret Service Shin Bet's chief reported that Hamas continues to fund terror out of the Palestinian budget. He said Hamas leaders spend about 90% of their time hiding and 10% preparing strikes against Israel. Before talking to Israel, Palestinians are said to be seeking an internal truce between Hamas and the various elements of Fatah. Simultaneously, the U.S. administration has sent new signals to Israel demanding the Israeli government stop expanding settlements and construction in the West Bank. The administration's concern was conveyed last week in a meeting between the Prime Minister and the White House's top Middle East advisor. In another step, the Prime Minister met with senior American officials at the White House to discuss the administration's plan to reduce the amount of loans given to Israel because they were spending them on West Bank settlements and the security. In Europe, the recent bombings of synagogues in Turkey and an attack on a Jewish school in France appear to have jolted European leaders into action against anti-Semitism at long last. After a Jewish day school near Paris was burned down, the French president announced the creation of a special interministerial entity to deal with anti-Semitic incidents. The Italian prime minister told a delegation of the European Jewish Congress this week that he would call on his counterparts to take up the issue at an upcoming European summit. In addition, the head of the European Commission, the executive arm of the European Union, has agreed to hold a seminar in the next few weeks on how to confront anti-Semitism in Europe. Best of luck to all those involved with the new direction. Okay, you say, Rabbi, that's plenty of news. Indeed it is. In fact, it's too much news. So why did I just run all of this?
Never made it as a wise man. I couldn't cut it as a poor man stealing. Tired of living like a blind man. I'm sick of sight without a sense of feeling. And this is how you remind me. This is how you remind me of what I really am. This is how you remind me of what I...
It's like this. The more things change, the more they stay exactly the same. And I mean exactly. What you just heard from me are the precise news stories, with a few names excised, that we ran right here on the Two Jewish Radio Show 12 years ago this week, November 30th, 2002. That Nickelback song I just played was the number one tune in America. I was a mere stripling of 41 years back then. My children, one of whom is now in college, one in high school, and the other a year past bat mitzvah, were then just 6, 3, and 2 years old. Pretty much nobody had a smartphone. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram weren't even glimmers in the eyes of future programming icons, let alone Vine. George W. Bush was president of the U.S. early in his first term, and the war in Iraq had not yet been won. In fact, we'd just invaded Afghanistan. Jimmy Carter won the Nobel Peace Prize. Tiger Woods was unbeatable, as were the Los Angeles Lakers. Many things were very, very different 12 years ago this weekend. But some things are exactly the same. The stories about worldwide Islamic terrorism, Israeli-Palestinian non-relations, and international anti-Semitism seem like they came from this morning's news. The story about the Palestinian efforts to bridge the Hamas-Fatah divide sound like they were written yesterday and will be written again tomorrow. The story about the U.S. administration's profound concern about additional Israeli settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem could have been taken out of the news any week this year. You know, I took the liberty of removing the name of the Israeli prime minister and his Palestinian counterpart, as well as the U.S. president and his chief Middle East envoy from those stories, but I left them essentially intact otherwise. But you should know the Israeli prime minister in those stories was the late Ariel Sharon, not today's leader Bibi Netanyahu. The Palestinian leader was the late Yasser Arafat, not Mahmoud Abbas. The U.S. president so concerned about Israeli settlements was George W. Bush, not Barack Obama. And the Middle East envoy was Elliot Abrams, not John Kerry. And on the Turkish news story, Prime Minister Erdogan didn't need to be edited because he's back.
Chill out, what's she yelling for? Lay back, it's all been done before. And if...
In the words of another popular tune from 2002, the year of those news stories from Avril Lavigne, it's all been done before. Because otherwise, it's just depressingly identical to today's news. There are different terror attacks, different victims, new prime ministers, new presidents repeating the same mistakes of past generations. Palestinians embracing death and terrorism in the unconscionable misbelief that these offer hope and life. Israeli governments faced with horrible provocations from the hopeless and the psychotics, based in tenuous coalitions themselves, lacking the courage to do more than act with greater and greater shows of strength. American leaders with no clearer idea of what they are trying to accomplish in the Middle East than a cat has in the middle of a swimming pool. And there are horrible new anti-Semites rising up in the same haunts as the old ones, sometimes wearing different clothing and names, but committing the same kinds of barbarous acts. Schools are attacked, museums are attacked, synagogues are attacked, rabbis are attacked. It could make you lose all hope. I'm beginning to see that there's something to the idea that we keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. Perhaps to a belief that the course we are on will not resolve for the better without a substantial change of direction in the whole Middle East region. The last time I can recall that things seemed this paralyzed in the Holy Land's neighborhood was even earlier, way back in 1991, just after the Gulf War's victory for freedom over Saddam Hussein. I had just arrived there for a year's stay in Israel. Yitzhak Shamir was the Israeli prime minister and was widely accused of having no vision and no leadership, even by his own party. The first George Bush was president. He and James Baker, his IC Secretary of State, had a nasty reputation in Israel for harshly pressuring their Jewish allies and favoring the Arabs at every turn. It appeared to be a dark time for the future of peace and for Israel that had existed in quite a while. And yet, there were reasons for hope then, and there are reasons for hope now. Out of that weird time came the Madrid Conference and the Oslo process, which gave a few years of major hope and led to real peace between Jordan and Israel, among others, and made Israel prosperous. You know, I don't tend to do editorial rants on Too Jewish, at least not too much, preferring usually to opt for a more middle course, but I'm beginning to simply believe that unless some dramatic steps are taken by Israel, which I think will find partnership with the moderate Arab states and even Abbas's Palestinian Authority, things will simply keep on repeating again and again, endlessly. It's not a cycle of violence exactly, it's something else. It's a nearly willful inability to climb out of a hole when the brief opportunity presents itself to try to create something different than the same kinds of horrible, repeated tragedy. I know it's not fair, and Israel should not have to shoulder the burden of creating peace, but that's how it'll be. And there are actually a few who will share that burden now, I think. Albert Einstein, Mike Nichols' distant cousin, defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. We've been doing that for much too long. We're approaching Hanukkah now, the time of miracles. Perhaps we need to make our own miracles. It really is time to make a change. Then perhaps we'll have one more very important thing to feel thankful for, actual peace in Israel. This time, we must do more than just hope. When we return in a few moments, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9. Our guest will be comedian Joel Chasnoff, a Jewish day school graduate and a very funny guy. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish is for the coming holiday of Hanukkah. Just 16 more shopping days till the Festival of Lights and Latkes. Only 14 days more until the greatest Hanukkah on earth, the Temple Emmanuel. The playout comes from Israel, a version of Ma'oz Tzur, the best-known Hanukkah hymn married to a melody by Kanaan, harmonized by a great Israeli a cappella group under the name of Ner Mechaver. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a wonderful conclusion to your weekend of Thanksgiving gratitude to God, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Ma'oz Tzur Yeshuati Lechanae Le Shabbat.